Cabinet today has approved for introduction a criminal proceeds recovery bill in the name of Mark Burton, Minister of Justice. Approved policy for a bill on protection against ambush marketing around major events. Such legislation is needed before the Rugby World Cup 2011, but it is a generic legislation, and it's being developed by Trevor Mallard. We have approved policy for a judicial retirement age bill, which will raise the age of retirement for judges from 68 to 70. This bill will be in Michael Cullen's name. It's clear that New Zealand's retirement age of 68 for judges is quite out of step with other like jurisdictions, and that change we have agreed with. We've agreed to proceed to sign the optional protocol to the Convention on the Safety of the United Nations and Associated Personnel, a protocol which increases significantly the scope of application of the original convention. It will go through the normal parliamentary treaty examination process after signature. There will need to be a small amendment to legislation before ratification, and that process is with Winston Peters as Minister of Foreign Affairs. We have agreed to the release of draft regulations for consultation on the regs around the mutual securities offerings under the Trans-Tasman Agreement. That's Leanne Dalziel's area. And also we agreed today to release a discussion document on a review of on-farm adverse events recovery frameworks. Jim Anderson is due to issue that today, I believe. We've obviously had a lot of major events, particularly flooding, also the snow event, which have had significant implications for rural businesses. And we've decided that after a run of these, it would be a good idea to look at the framework that we've been using to support rehabilitation and recovery. Coming up in the House this week, we hope to progress the Employment Relations Amendment Bill through to a third reading. Also the Child Support Amendment Bill for third reading, as well as getting to committee stages of the Standards and Conformance Bill. Wednesday, of course, is a Members' Day. Otherwise, coming up this week, Michael Cullen goes to the APEC meeting in Vietnam for finance ministers. Statements coming out. There will be one from Trevor Mallard tomorrow around the major regional initiative planned for the Canterbury area. David Cunliffe will have announcements around the Broadband Challenge project, grants associated with that, and also with Ruth Dyson about the review of the first year of the Deaf Relay service. There will be an announcement coming from Steve Mahari about a major summit to be held later in the year on how to capitalise on research in New Zealand with commercial value, and also announcements around the Marsden Fund allocations and also the grants to leading scientists. Later in the week, expect the Community Broadcasting Policy Framework to be announced, and there are a number of other key speeches by ministers around trade and other areas in the course of the week. Now, I've brought together some statements in my own name for today. There were two major donor conferences in Stockholm last week at which New Zealand was represented on the plight of people in the Lebanon and in the Gaza Strip, and we have pledged that we will contribute another $1.5 million spread equally between the two areas. $750,000 goes to UNICEF, the UN Children's Fund, for water and sanitation work in South Lebanon, and the UN Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian Refugees in the Near East, UNRWA. We allocate another $750,000 for emergency health care in the occupied Palestinian territories. That is on top of other donations we've announced in the past month. Second announcement is around, in effect, a a rethink around how New Zealand recognises service in the Antarctic. To those who've made an outstanding contribution to either exploration, scientific research, conservation, environmental protection, or knowledge of the Antarctic region, or in support of New Zealand's objectives or operations in the Antarctic. There has been a British polar medal since 1904, and it has recognised the significant contribution of New Zealanders, but there have not been any awards issued since 1993. There's been a long discussion with the constituency here in New Zealand, which takes a great interest in the Antarctic. That includes Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade, includes Defence, Fisheries Ministry, the Royal Society, Department of Conservation, Antarctica New Zealand, which runs the New Zealand operation there. And the decision has been made to have a new New Zealand Antarctic Medal, and we have issued the drawings for the medal, which is nicely on the reverse side with the penguins, with the, presumably Erebus in the background. The medal will be what's called a sixth level honour, and that is, it will be equivalent to the Queen's Service Medal level of honours, and the first recipients will be announced in the 2007 New Year's Honours list in a few months' time. The next announcement is the appointment of the new director of GCSB, who will be Air Marshal Bruce Ferguson, well known to those present as the former Chief of Defence. He will take up his role as Director of Security on the 1st of November for a four-year term. Since retiring from Defence, he has been acting at the Ministry of Civil Defence and Emergency Management. He has come through as someone very experienced at senior levels in the security and intelligence community and has a background as a strong and skilled leader. And the final announcement from me is around the royal visit from the Netherlands. The Crown Prince, the eldest child of Queen Beatrix, the Prince of Orange, and his wife, Princess Maxima, coming to New Zealand at the end of next month for a five-day official visit, which I know will be of particular interest to many people of Dutch descent in New Zealand. Queen Beatrix, the Prince's mother, came to New Zealand 14 years ago for the 350th anniversary of Abel Tasman's voyage, but this is the first official royal visit from the Netherlands since that time. And the Netherlands is regarded as one of our very closest friends in Europe. Any questions?
Prime Minister, there seems to be some confusion in the Māori Party caucus about koha. Do you see it as a prefab issue?
Yes.
And what's your stance on it?
I think it's absolutely vital that there is never any suggestion of money being paid to solicit representations by members of parliament on behalf of members of the public or organisations. In New Zealand, the tradition is that people approach a member of parliament who may or may not decide to take up their case and advocate, but the decision to take up that case should be in no way enticed, solicited, induced by the offer of money.
Lady Māori MPs that would get offered koha, what do they do with
it? I think it's an abuse of the term koha. There can be no misunderstanding that the giving of money in return for service or policy to be written is not right.
What if they just receive money from a group of people, a bunch of Māori people,
who
doesn't just go to Labour campaign funds,
do
they give it back?
Well, I can speak for my own electorate office and say that money would never be accepted by someone who sought the office to make representations. That just would not happen. It may well be that Parliament doesn't have guidelines on these things, but I would have thought it was just absolutely plain common sense that in New Zealand a Member of Parliament's services are given for free. In Britain, in the not too distant past, there have been allegations around cash for questions. I'm not aware that that's ever happened here.
So someone from the Māori caucus is going to receive what's the rule of the Labour Party?
Well, the rule is you cannot receive money for making representations to people. It's quite wrong for people to come into an office, put money on the table and say, will you do something for me? Quite wrong.
What if
someone turns up afterwards and, you know, you've helped them with an immigration case, for instance, and they just want to express their gratitude, would you accept it then?
Well, I haven't known that to happen either. As I've said when we've explored these issues at earlier times, sometimes down the track, someone who's very grateful for help they've been given will come in with a bunch of flowers or perhaps some chocolates for the staff. But that's an entirely different matter from someone coming in, putting money on the table and saying, will you help me? We cannot have that happen.
What about when there's no reciprocation, so someone's just giving it to you because they support what you're doing as an MP or what the party's doing here? Is sort of cash.
Well, MPs will often have people give them donations completely separate from any makings of representation or constituency or advocacy work, and that would be handed on to the party funds. But I think it's important to be very clear that there can be no money sought or offered for giving a service to a member of the public or an organisation.
So even if there's no reciprocation, it's still unacceptable to just accept a cash or a sort of a koha or a donation, was no suggestion of anything being done in exchange.
I've been very clear what I'm saying here. You cannot in New Zealand really go into an electorate office, slap down money on the table and say that I want you to do something for me. That's completely against any sense of ethics. Members of the public, of course, give money to political parties. That act must be completely divorced from any consideration of a service being offered.
What about corporate hospitality? I mean, do you see a problem with MPs and ministers being wined and dined, taken to the opera, rugby or what have you, by corporates?
Well, corporates do have corporate boxes. They do invite people to opening nights and so on. I think that can be taken up judiciously. I think it's important that where you may be in a decision-making role vis-a-vis a particular corporate, that you exercise some discretion around that. But to stop anyone ever accepting tickets to the rugby, I think would be going a little bit far.
But that could run into hundreds of, possibly thousands of dollars worth of hospitality a year, couldn't it?
I'd be very surprised if that amounted to such a sum of money for any individual.
Do you think the guidelines are clear enough on all types of gifts? I mean, for instance, if Koha is so clear, why is the Cabinet Office looking at Lafel? What's different in that case?
Well, as you know, we have very clear rules around Cabinet and have had them for a long time. We have just had rules brought in for Parliament, which were encompassing all members of Parliament. Now, people declare gifts where they're worth more than $500. But I think it's very important to distinguish from the point about getting money for doing something for someone and then people who may wish to give a donation completely divorced from that.
Is it clear to you from Mr. Hillary's comments that he did accept cash in exchange for giving services?
I don't know. I didn't watch the interview in any detail. I think the inference to be drawn from what appeared on the news was that was what was being said. Whether it was or not, I really couldn't say.
Are you grateful for the Māori Party's support of Philip Field? They seem to have stuck their neck out and be supporting him, whereas a lot of your MPs are staying quiet. Are you grateful for this?
Now, Labour MPs are very clear that Mr. Field committed serious errors of judgment. I'd be surprised if members of other parties aren't of the same view.
What is different about Lafel compared to Koha?
There's no difference. There's no difference. The point is that money should not be offered in return for the member giving a service.
Should they be written out in black and white for MPs? Should it be down on...
Well, maybe it's come to that, but up until now people are pretty much dependent on the common sense and the ethics of people.
Is that something set down by each individual party as opposed to... Because we do look at...
No, it's simply common sense. You don't need to be told that if you're any ethical person.
The issue of election advertising spending, there's been a couple of polls out recently showing that the majority of people think that they should pay the money back that the Auditor General has found was wrongly spent in its draft report.
Found to be unlawful.
In its draft report. Found that.
Well, I'm only interested in a final report. and we could go around in circles on this for quite some time. It's absolutely clear to me that the Auditor General has raised some issues around the rules under which spending has occurred, but people spend in good faith under those rules. And we've been very clear across five parliamentary parties that people feel there's unfairness in changing the rules after the event.
If the Auditor General does find that the money should be paid back or that it was wrongly spent, will Labor pay it back?
Well, Labor has spent within the rules as they were understood, as have other political parties. No one sets out to break those rules. I don't think we should jump to conclusions about final reports.
How can you say that Labor spent in good faith when it was actually warned about the pledge cards before it spent, or while it was embarking, or while it still had time to withdraw the pledge cards?
No, that's a completely separate issue, as you know. That was not the Auditor General. The Chief Electoral Officer started to form opinions, but that's a completely different matter. And that also involved a very different attitude towards what was attributable expenditure from what had prevailed in the past.
Why are you so reluctant to name the figure that's in this report? Because
this is a draft and we're waiting for a final report. I repeat, the rules are as they have always been. The only real change in 2003 was that a crest, which had previously been optional, had to go on. Prior to that, it didn't. But frankly, people have spent in exactly the same way over rather a long period of time. And as you know, my strong view is that the National Party did not spend its allocation because it had buckets of covert funding, which it doesn't want to tell you about or anybody else about. If you want to use the word corruption in New Zealand politics, use it about that. This is about big money buying elections. I could take you back to 2002, well within the election spending period. Here is a National Party leaflet. Here is Bill and English's commitment. Here he sets out his six pledges, absolutely identical to the approach taken by Labor. Not only on that particular issue, but it came up again, issued within the campaign period, pledges on crime. I have around six examples, five to six examples of exactly such spending which was engaged in before. Now, no one ever raised it because it is quite clear that this sort of spending has been within the rules.
Is it any better though in the eyes of the public, whether it's just Labor, whether it's everyone that's done it, isn't the issue that all parties have broken the rules?
No. No, all parties have worked within the rules. And now, some are suggesting that the rules should have been different. It's rather late to suggest they should have been different when people have acted in good faith within them.
There's actually three parties that were acting more or less within the rules: Progressives, Māori Party and National.
Well, firstly, the Progressives and the Māori Party had virtually negligible parliamentary allocations. They were two one-person parties, and as I say, the National Party had so much covert funding, which you will not be able to find out the origin of, because it drops its major corporate funding, cash for policy, into trust funds, which cannot then be traced. And if there's one thing that needs to be corrected with the review of the election, it is to prise open that kind of secret funding, because if anything is going to lead to corruption in New Zealand politics, it is big corporates buying elections.
Yes, but maybe it's so secret.
Labor, of course, has a business house fundraising campaign, and Labor would be very happy for the electoral funding rules to be prized right open to make for much more transparency of donations. As it is, we got one significant donation, and that one was absolutely there in black and white print, with the person proud to say who he was. As a matter of record, having seen the extraordinary National Party policy of privatising accident compensation, which meant billions of dollars of earnings for private insurance companies, I sought from the party president information as to whether insurance companies had donated to Labor, and he assured me they had not.
So are you saying National has broken any laws?
What I'm saying,
almost like it's corruption, aren't you?
I'm saying that our electoral law allows for secret money with other motivations to buy elections, and that is what needs to be tidied up this time around.
proposal.
I further say, as I said on radio this morning, that outright lies were told about the exclusive Brethren funding of the National Party.
National said that Labor used taxpayers' money to steal the election rather than covert funding.
They used covert funding. Labor had its parliamentary allocation, as did other parties, which it spent within the rules and spent in a way absolutely consistent with the way in which National in past elections had spent it. Because National had buckets of money, covert money, which it will not tell you where it got it from, it did not touch its parliamentary allocation. It's then a matter of record that for the remainder of that financial year, it had money to chuck around on clearly highly political branding advertising, like that around the Plunkett campaign, websites like the so-called Wastemaster, all the things that they would attack other parties for right now.
Are you expecting the final report from the Auditor General to come to a different conclusion?
I really have no views to offer on that one way or the other. I don't wish to influence in any way. Obviously, parties have made submissions. I would imagine that other parties, like Labor, have made it clear that they spent in good faith within the rules as they understood them.
Did Labor in its submission admit to any unlawful spending, or did it challenge...
Labor believes that it's spent within the rules that prevail.
How did the Ministry of Justice and Treasury generally work on retrospective legislation? Have they been...
Obviously, some consideration has been given to how validation of the parliamentary appropriation could be used. That's been made clear for some time. And that is normally what an Auditor General would recommend when he considers that money's been spent without outside an appropriation. But I have to say that year after year, the Auditor General has signed off government accounts which contain spending on material exactly like this. And that is why I make the point to you that we're being told that this is a suggestion that the rules are changing after the event.
Because you're holding up Bill Inglis's. Mm. I mean, what about under Dawn Brash? He didn't have a single item against him.
He didn't use the money in the three-month period before the last campaign because he had buckets of covert secret funding. That then meant he had the parliamentary allocation to use after the election, and that money has gone on quite blatantly political ends, such as the Plunkett of branding advertising that he's done, things like the Wastemaster website. As you know, I've also drawn attention in the past to the import of the Solicitor General's opinion, which was that the three-month time period was actually relatively irrelevant.
Who's doing the work on the retrospective legislation?
Oh, well, I mean, obviously it would have to be considered by the relevant government departments. I don't want to go into any more detail about that. But the normal course would be to validate legislation and expenditure.
Are you ruling out paying money back?
Well, I'm saying we haven't seen a final report. I'm saying that not even a draft report has it been suggested that anybody pay money back. I'm all ears for the final report.
So why do you think retrospective legislation drafted if the final report's not even out? Is that basically to give the government time to prepare?
Well, the government has to think of what the appropriate course is if the final report goes in a particular direction. But we haven't got a final report.
When do you expect to receive that?
I don't know.
Do you still believe it's not getting any traction outside the Beltway?
Well, I think that there is not a complete picture out there because the fact is that the rules have not changed. The rules appear to be being reinterpreted after the event. And it so happens that five parties represented here in the Parliament don't think that's fair.
Is the media off the mark when it speculates the figures around $800,000?
I'm not going to give any indication of what figures might have been mentioned. The fundamental issue is that people spend their allocations in good faith within the rules as they've been.
You've been reported as saying this is just a beat up by National. Is that how you see the whole issue?
Oh, the slogan, quote, to pay it back, is a National Party slogan. and it is a slogan that is, of course, catchy, but it is not based on any request by anybody to do any such thing.
Seems to have gained some resonance though with the public when they're polls saying they want Labor to pay it back.
Well, you have the National Party running around using very extreme language. What I'm saying is that that invites a very strong response from Labor, a very strong response about the corruption that enters into New Zealand elections when people take money secretly, won't declare it, and further lie about the origins of it. All that happened on the record. As for the Labor Party, the ACT Party, the Green Party, New Zealand First and United First, they transparently spent their parliamentary allocations, put the crest on it, no mystery about what the origin of the money was. How that can be called covert, I do not know.
Prime Minister, the Canterbury Manufacturers Association put out commissioned a report on the energy outlook, a fairly pessimistic view in terms of possible shortages out towards 2010. Do you share that assessment?
I haven't seen the report. It would be best to go to the Minister of Energy.
Do you think it's acceptable, for Wellington's problems over the last few days, it's now been several days, and it'll be till Thursday before Parliament actually gets heating back on. In the capital city, is that acceptable? There's a number of business people saying it's third world infrastructure.
Well, it's not a good look, but nor is it a service directly under the government's control. I understand the water issue lies with the council, and the gas issue with the private company. And they obviously need to do their very best to restore the services.
Is there anything the government can do in terms of helping people establish who's liable? Because there seems to be some confusion about that too.
Well, I really don't have any view or advice on that.
Are you drawing a distinction between the Auckland electricity prices for Transpower being under government's control on this issue?
Well, clearly Transpower is a state-owned enterprise, so the government is going to take a very close look at a state-owned enterprise, a major utility, letting the public of Auckland down.
Is there anything the government needs to do in this case?
I've got no advice on that at all. I think the action really lies with the council and with the gas company.
What are you doing for heating on the ninth floor?
Haven't felt the cold.
You talked about the food over the weekend?
No, I haven't.
You intend to? Are there to leave?
No, there's nothing to discuss. At the present time, the senior government whip is dealing with the issues around work in the electorate that needs to be done, and we'll be organising other members to do it.
Any contact at Auckland Police to the Prime Minister's Department or anyone connected about the investigation?
Can you confirm if you'll be meeting with some of Auckland mayors later on this week?
Well, they've asked for a meeting with me. They've apparently got ideas they wish to share. I'm all ears.
When will that be?
Presumably later in the week if it occurs.
Is it true that Trevor Mallard and Mark Gerton will also be attending?
I've no idea.
What's your view on the report in the Herald today about potentially fewer councils more concentrated government?
Well, I'm not aware that that's the proposal they intend to put. For the record, clearly Auckland needs stronger regional leadership. There is a major report that was commissioned by a group of international experts on how to move Auckland ahead as a major and successful international city. And the question that stands out above all is how to get stronger regional leadership to get Auckland moving. Now, if the mayors wish to address those issues with us, we're all ears.
Can I just go back to the, you see the code of conduct labour idea in terms of MPs, gifts of MPs? I mean, how strongly do you feel about that? I mean, the Auditor General, for example, puts out rules on chiefs of SOEs, or some of the stuff around Ross Armstrong, which, you know, is designed to give good disclosure guidelines to protect heads of SOEs. You know, do MPs need any more protection?
Well, that seems a bit of a muddle to me. Obviously, we now have the Parliamentary Register of Interests, which includes gifts. I frankly would be absolutely staggered if anyone thought it was appropriate to have someone come and put money down on the table and ask for something to be done for them. And I would never have thought that such a thing needed to be spelled out as clearly wrong. Now, perhaps the Standing Orders Committee need to look at that in the context of whether a code of conduct is needed, but there are some basic things that you just expect that people would understand.
But could there be disadvantage some cultures?
I mean, no. There's only one culture around that sort of thing in New Zealand. It's the culture that says, in New Zealand, you do not pay your representatives to do things for you.
The corporate boxes full of those are clearly, you know, which are is the type of way that wealthier cultures, you know, pay people
to get off of the favours. No, I don't think that's fair at all. As I've said to you, on many occasions, constituents would come up with a bunch of flowers, a box of chocolates, a small china ornament, you name it. And I really put, you know, the corporate box in the sort of legitimate lobbying category. I think some discretion and discernment needs to be exercised around how often that is accepted and in what circumstances. But it's a totally different matter from someone offering money in return for an MP making a decision in their favour, making representations in their favour.